Welcome to the Self-Study Project, a podcast to deepen your practice through reflection with co-hosts Jenna Baird and Stephanie Gibson. On this episode of the Self-Study Project, we are exploring everything that retreating has to offer. Not only is the fall to the winter transition all about the natural retreat time, but we just did a retreat, Jenna just did a retreat, and we are headed into a year of self-retreat. And so we just kind of wanted to talk to you about how important and how readily available you could do this for yourself. I mean, how long has it been since our retreat in Yosemite? It's been almost a month.
Yeah.
Which was absolutely, it was very transformative, would you say is the right word?
Yeah, that's a good word for it. Yeah.
Very, very transformative. It was on 11/11, which numerologically speaking has it was a significant portal, a very amazing opportunity. And based on the time and the signs, it was really about dissolving anything that keeps you from your highest self, your dharma, your ultimate self. It was a very thin veil for that opportunity to understand how can I transform into what I am becoming, you know? And we saw a weekend of significant transformation, and which sometimes hurts, right?
Yes. There's always a little challenge getting uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Whenever you're shown what you need to change in your life, it's usually, well, it doesn't have to be, but it is usually through discomfort, conflict, whether that be in relationships, friendships, business, health, you know, is usually the time that at least that we start listening, that change is necessary and transformation is taking place. But sometimes that's just, it is necessary, just like a butterfly did not start out as a smaller butterfly. It went through a complete metamorphic change from something unrecognizable and into this transformative thing that can now fly through life instead of move one inch at a time. So yeah, it can definitely be painful, but that 11/11 weekend for many was a tremendous growth. People even mentioned about how easily they dropped former ideas they had about themselves. The art project that we did, oh, that was so wonderful. We're going to do each time, or at least next time, I would say. And what just to ignite our inner muse and find what our inner calling is, because that's something I want to talk to you about, Jenna. You recently did something after the retreat that allowed you to essentially find out what your internal and your higher self actually had to say, right? You got silent enough. You had a silent retreat or what was that? What was your retreat about?
Yeah. So a lot of it was, what I call a purification retreat, which anciently yes. has been done like for thousands of years. And we've lost many of this art, but you know, a lot of times we have to go to an ashram or kind of like really go someplace to do this. But I had already, you know, been studying yoga for 20 years now and practice. And I know all of the modalities, but I've never done something quite like this in the way that it was all about me. And I just wanted to talk about that too, because one of the things that I've realized, and just for those that maybe are listening, that they may also have the same thing, the more I talk about it, the more I realize others are going through a similar transformational process. And that is that for so long, we have been putting others at the forefront and just in an active service. And I was looking at my life and I was like, dang, I've been in an active service for a long time. And that's a beautiful thing, but it's also one that can kind of get now out of balance. And what's calling to me too is that what served us at one point in our life will no longer anymore. And so we have to kind of realize that, like, it's like what was sustainable at one time and what kind of held down the fort, so to speak. Great. Like no judgment about that, but there is a certain now evolutionary type of process. We call it ascension. You can call it evolution, whatever you want, but that's calling us to do life a bit different, a little bit brighter, a little bit more authentic, maybe a little bit more in alignment, right? And there's been for so long a kind of I give myself away action and energy. And so many of the people that I follow are also feels like very much channeling this information in. And so with that said, I'd love to talk about the energy of 2023, because I think, you know, mm-hmm. I know both you and I have already felt a significant call. And then mm-hmm. to come to find out that what the actual meaning of yeah. the year is, I thought that was really cool when we talked. It's yeah. like, oh, wow, we're already kind of feeling into that and not even knowing what 2023 was going to be about. But right. but purification is huge. And it's something that allowed me to go, like, it's the idea of going deep into the cave, right? When we get quiet and silent. And I didn't do a completely silent retreat, but it was for the most part. And all of us, I think, are finding there's so much information out there about our nervous system, our vagus nerve, and that is just way over bombarded, you know, modern lifestyle and living is like no longer of service. So mm-hmm. to be able to go into that type, I did actually 5 days and it was perfect because I did it during actually Thanksgiving weekend. I didn't have any problem with just like letting go of the tradition, but you know, everybody to each their own of I love family getting together, but it was really something that I was like, I know I can accomplish this on this week and I'm going to go for it. So that's mm-hmm. kind of, yeah, I made a commitment to myself and mm-hmm. it felt really good.
Yeah. I think that, you know, it offers an opportunity for gratitude too, because, you know, the self-sacrificing service that especially mothers, which I'm not a mother. Well, I have a fur child now, so there's yeah. a little bit, but nothing quite like those who have some two-leggeds, you know, running around is that, you know, the self-sacrifice that is partially what transmutes the energy into life, you know, is the creation aspect. And then that kind of happens and then it becomes identity. And then even those who are not parents, you know, that self-sacrificing service becomes servitude. And in servitude, it's no longer also being done at an optimal health or an optimal exchange. It's almost like, well, everyone also expects that I'm going to rescue them, or I'm going to, this is just what I do, and this is my identity, and this is who they expect me to be. And therefore, it's a cycle, like a domino or like a circle that is constant. Like, well, no one's going to take care of that, because guess who takes care of that? That's me. But when you can take that time for yourself, and even numerologically speaking, you know, 2022 has been a 6 energy, which has been about the external relationships, usually centered around love and family, but even just the way that you show up for others to create with and for others has been this year. But 2023 is a 7 energy, which is an inward journey. It is a time to actually say, with what I have gained, so my family and the connections that I, and the sometimes servitude that I have put, and service, it's very fine line between the two, but where I've put myself out there for the sake of others. And now I'm going to harness that effort and energy, because all of outside is all hopefully good and established and dealt with. And now I'm going to go inward, and even finding your higher purpose, even just taking care of yourself. And then the thing that I'm looking forward to asking you about is some of your work is the silence, is the listening, you know, because the sixth year has been very externally generated, even though it's been relational, it's been relationship, which is a evolution to when all our ducks feel like they're in a row is when we kind of feel like we can go inward. And in numerologically speaking, it's been working up to that. But something I want to mention before we move on is, you know, before to those listeners who are like, gosh, you know, how can you take 5 days, you know, for yourself as a parent of three kids and a business owner? Or how can I even do that as a wife? And what are they going to do? You know, how are they going to do that without me? And something we will talk only briefly throughout this podcast, because it's a very in-depth subject, is psychoneuroimmunology and the fact that the more you teach your body through the actions and behaviors of your life and what your programs of development have been for you, the story your subconscious has created, the more you tell your body through actions and life that you can set it aside in order to accommodate those around you, the more you teach self-sacrifice. And self-sacrifice on the level of your body, on biochemistry level, looks like autoimmunity. It looks like cancer. It looks like things where you told your body that it, in fact, was not important, and that the needs of everyone else around you is more important. And the more you biochemically change that for yourself, the more you literally start to self-attack, which is, oh, I have a warning here that we've lost the call. And we're back after a little bit of technical difficulties.
Yes.
Goodness. But yes, so self-sacrifice, yes, autoimmunity, cancer. When we create a lifetime of setting ourselves aside, there are absolutely consequences, because the body at all times is just trying to adapt to what you are telling it is its experience. So if your life is ridden with stresses and worries of an imagined future, and therefore your body is riddled with stress hormones and the consequence of this imagined experience, or maybe the real experience, all your body is doing is at all times trying to make adaptations, which are adaptations are the diagnoses that we receive. They are the titles by which physicians recognize what adaptations your body has made. And as a result, they replace it with missing biochemistry known as pharmaceuticals. And then you continue to live that way with a band-aid on the adaptation, as opposed to changing your life so that your body no longer needs to adapt in a certain way that it has likely whispered to you over the years through intuition and desire. And then it started to talk a little louder through some random illnesses or random injuries. And eventually it will yell at you and in a foreign language. And finally, you now have this disease diagnosis that is difficult to live with. And instead, you know, we can take these times that we think we don't have time for, but do you really want to be forced into the bed of the hospital before you decide to take rest, right? You know, do we really want to call it selfish to the person who says, I'm taking the next 5 days for myself, and all y'all can totally handle yourself and all of your needs, because I'm going to do this now for myself, because guess what? Being too nice can kill you. Mm-hmm. You know, yes. Doing too much self-sacrifice can lead to so much adaptation that you have taught your body that its needs no longer matter. In fact, everybody else's needs matter more than mine. And therefore, go ahead, attack yourself. It's fine. And it sounds so simplified, but this is absolutely what is happening with so many of the diseases that we see happening. And therefore, the fact that Jenna can take this series of time, and the fact that we are trying to share with you these tools that you can do on a even daily basis. In fact, Jenna, you know what I'd like to ask you first is, what, before we go into what your silence, your excuse me, your purification retreat looked like, from it, what is one practice that you think somebody could implement easily just every single day that brought tremendous change for you?
Yeah, that's such a good question, because when we want to make it practical and it's like, what can I incorporate right away that makes a huge difference in my life? And I would say breath work, because it's always there for you. You don't have to buy anything. It's already readily available to you, and it's just learning how to access it. So breath work would be like top of the list. Purification, using your own personal purifier that you have built within. It's going to allow you to cleanse the body. So a lot of these like ancient practices like kriyas and learning those are amazing. But part of the kriya is breath work, because that is like your biggest built-in system that you have, and you can access it whenever you want. So I would say breath work is like on the top of the list.
And breath work is also the language of the nervous system. Whereas, you know, Joe Dispenza talks about your thoughts are the vocabulary of the mind, and your feelings are, your emotions are the vocabulary of the body, and your breath work is the vocabulary and therefore the controller of your nervous system. So if we then control our breath in a certain way that you'll describe, we can now change our nervous system. And we all know that stress is the leading destroyer of living vibrant things.
Yes. And don't you find any,
yeah,
we can all see and look, kind of look around and like, probably we've all thought about this, like, dang, that person doesn't live very healthy. Why do they, you know, live in so long? And like, why are, you know, where you'll like, you talked about kindness, and I think this is huge, because I know in my family line, this is a thing. And it's like my grandmother died of something that nobody knows what it really was. And it was a rare lung issue. But all of us, like especially the women in the family, could really see that my grandma was gave of everything that she had. She was a self-sacrificer. Everybody, you know, felt so loved by her. She was an incredible human. But so very kind. And what we have to remember now, because the planet is not sustainable anymore on just we being kind to everybody else, but then we're like, you know, not kind to ourselves. Like we have to do that kindness back to ourselves. And so that is like a huge part of this. And even, you know, tons of work, like we're learning is like when we don't, people, you know, can smoke their entire life and whatever, but it's about a lot of it, it's emotions. And if they don't handle that, or they've given too much of themselves, like all these things are really important, and stress and all of that. And if we don't make time at this point, our body's going to make us make time, right? So we got to just do it. And I've realized too, if I look at my life, and if we all look at our own individual life, there's signaling systems all the time telling us little hints about how to get back into what's the word, homeostasis, right? Into that equilibrium, and just like really being in alignment, because that's what yoga is all about, alignment. Like, am I in alignment or am I out of alignment? Are these thoughts in alignment, out of alignment? Is this action of the light or of the shadow, right? And so we can constantly think like, am I outsourcing my energy? Am I giving my power away? Am I giving my authority away? There's many ways in which our dialogue can seem very noble, because it could be very noble of me to say, well, you know what? I give of myself. Like, that's not a bad thing. But if the giving is to an extent where the body is actually reacting in a way that it no longer can handle that, and the body will do that at some point if it's too much. And so there's a lot of little signaling systems that we can listen to that will get us on point if we listen. Yeah,
because even with regards to there's somebody I listened to, I can't remember who it was, who even talked about veganism, and I happen to eat basically a vegan forward life, but I don't title myself as a vegan, because even veganism can end up becoming such a staunch position of the mind that if you aren't eating it properly, can actually destroy the body. Now, so can devout, you know, meat eating. Let's just say that someone is so staunchly keto and they don't have a gallbladder and that they think that it's the best way to go. Well, guess what? Your body's going to tell you different and it's only a matter of time. Mm-hmm. But your brain says, no, but I must eat this way. Or for a lot of people, veganism is a moral thing. And so they staunchly stand behind it, but they could be doing so at the destruction of themselves if they do not eat it correctly. And the same thing with giving of service is if you give of service and you take enough time to recharge your battery, that's great. But sometimes we get so caught up in the things that we're doing, either because we're exchanging our service for a currency that we need more of, you know, let's say finances. So then we push ourselves more because we need more of what that's giving us. Or whatever the reason is, we sometimes exceed the body's ability to continue at that pace. And a lot of, you know, the society we're in, they teach us to work really hard and retire at 65 and think that that's the time that life should be lived. When life is, you know, little vacations, little retirements, little, you know, moments of presence recharge your battery so fast, but how often do we take moments of presence? And so that makes that, you know, it makes perfect sense to say that you cannot, what is the phrase? You cannot pour from an empty cup. Mm-hmm. And you have to replenish by whatever means that is. And there are some ways to do it quickly, such as nature, you know, nature. And you'll talk about that, I'm sure, with the vagus nerve too, but you mentioned breath work. Before we leave the breath work, what's an example for those of us listening who don't really know what pranayama or the kriyas or what it means besides inhaling and exhaling? Is breath work, or what's an example of a breath work someone could do?
Yeah, that's huge. So we want to, there's just so much research on how if we just breathe through our nose. So start with that, like, start to check in with yourself and notice, am I breathing through my nose or through my mouth? And then longer duration of time with an inhale and an exhale is where the science shows that there's vast amount of benefits. And that would be for, like, on a regular basis, drawing out your inhale, slowing down your exhale. Now there's certain purifications where you're almost acting like a pump for your body, but those are ones you wouldn't do those all day long, right? You'd probably pass out. So then we see these purposes of kind of like charging up the system. And with that said too, I mean, there's so much around like breath work and cold plunge therapy and hot therapy, and those all go together. And, you know, as much as I enjoy Wim Hof's, you know, information, that is not really his method. Those are ancient techniques. And so just realizing how in depth the science is, and that's been around for a long time. And that when we, elongate that breath and just really breathe in through the nose and out, as the nostrils are meant for breathing. And that's a great place to begin, is with that. And then with the vagus nerve, just really mentioning that, because I know there's so much now about that and like so much research and people understanding it and its connection to the nervous system. And so with that said, alternate nostril breathing becomes a very valuable breath work that mm-hmm. is incredible. And then we have eye exercises that, you know, so I had gotten, just to share some information, like I got some things channeled down to me that I needed to do in order to help my help out with my health crises that I've been
during a meditation.
Actually before, yeah, it wasn't a meditation. It was like, basically, but I'd already known these techniques. It was like, you need to start doing these things.
Yeah.
And then I go to the doctor, and that's his recommendation. He's like, your nervous system, your vagus nerve, you need to do this. And I'm like, okay. So what it did is it gave me permission to just do it, but do it with all that I have. And what I realized too is that when there's a purpose in what we're doing, and I realized that, you know, really putting your mind forward, that like when you're doing this breath work, it's healing you. And really, like, visualization and mindset work around it is huge. And then it really elevates the whole vibration of the body. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, just there's this quote that's something along the lines like of choose people, things, whatever situations that you know feels good to your nervous system. And I think mm-hmm. that we can listen into that. We're like, oh, this feels good, or this mm-hmm. doesn't. And so understanding the nervous system, we don't even have to know a ton of science about really its, you know, complexity of it, but we can know mm-hmm. that we can listen in, and it's talking and we can hear what its navigation is trying to pull us towards. And mm-hmm. so it all starts there with that awareness.
And we have everything within us, with access, especially, you know, through meditation, through the field, which is also recognized in science, through Akashic records for those who can access those. For and then there's through shamanism and the medicine people of indigenous cultures and the Yellow Book of Medicine. You know, it maps the entire body and all the acupressure points, acupuncture points, meridian lines, you know, chakras. The Eastern philosophies and each Eastern medicine has been using this longer than we tend to even remember. And now that, and when we bring it back to life over here on the Western aspect, we start to think it's been recreated, you know, like, oh, this is new, like you said, with cold therapy. It's like, yeah. Well, actually, we used to not be held so comfortably in this middle path of thermostat controlled homes. We used to be more outdoors, and we would contrast between cold nights and hot days. And you know, it was a luxury to take all the water and bring it in and keep it warm enough for you to have a warm tub. It you just dipped into the water and cleaned yourself off and got right back out, you know, the comforts. But the knowledge and the access, even through meditation, even through the act of prayer, you know, is a very active, active and there, and not, therefore not, it's a giving out more so than a receiving. Silence and listening is a way more powerful way to hear the response that you are seeking, instead of just the giving or even the constant asking. What about the listening? Because to me, that's what's been fascinating when talking to you of things you've gotten cues for, or you know, knowledge, or even things like, you know, Athena, or one time you told me, I forgot the context. I know it had a lot to do with the self-worth related things that I personally battle with, being enough and self-worth. And, yeah. And you talked about having seen me before we even started really hanging out as friends, with like a crown from another area, right? You said yeah. something about me. Yeah. And yeah. That you just received that information. You were silent, and that was information you received. I didn't approach you with this knowledge and tell you who I want you to see me as.
Right. You are aware of that. And I know, I remember thinking that, I was like, gosh, I acknowledge this, you know, this. And when I use the word royalty, it's kind of like, you know, because there's a historical word around that, but it's like this, where we really tap into our inner goddess or our inner priestess. And it's like, you know, there's this wisdom and capacity mm-hmm. for deep wisdom. And we all have that feeling when we meet someone that's like your vibe, you know, really attracts your tribe and that type of thing. And so,
I love that.
Yeah.
Your vibe attracts your tribe. I've heard it before, but it's just so, when you're ready to hear it again, it just really hits you.
that's right. Yeah. I know, and there's so much that we can channel in too. It's like, I'm realizing, so from the time that I was a little girl, because I couldn't hear very well, and I've talked about this in previous podcasts before, that actually was almost like a yogi thing to undergo that, because the yogi goes into the silence. Well, I literally was pulled into silence because I couldn't hear very well. So it's kind of when you lose one sense, right, then another one activates and brightens. Mm-hmm. And so the channeling and intuition really heightened. And it came forward to me that it's like, continue to do that work of what you've always known. And, you know, doing things like stop dimming your light, go into meditation and pour the light and love on yourself. And one of the things that I got you know, access to was this idea that there's light medicine. And I was like, what is this light medicine? You know, and it's like, and now I'm just, there's so much to know about this and I'm still in the process of it. So before I'd ever share, teach in a retreat, I'd have to have my own personal experiences, which I'm starting to have. But there's just so much around even like the sunlight. We've demonized the sunlight, but it's very, there's infrared. There's an incredible amount of nourishment that comes from the sun. And it's thought that it is in very much of representation of source or God or whatever you would like to call that. And when we plug into that energy, we can feel so charged up. And I have to just say, I'm so passionate about this because I actually got to experience it where I woke up every day. And this is fall time. And I know I'm in California, but it was cold for me. And so I woke up with the, you know, weather the way that it was. And it was so refreshing. And I'm like, why am I not doing this? You know, incredible. And now I'm totally hooked because I love nature. And as most of you know, I'm just totally a nature baby. But to intentionally go outside and kind of, you know, you can close your eyes or gaze at the sun when it's at that, when it's just coming up. And the charge and energy that I got and the necessary amount of radiance from that was absolutely incredible. And so I'm really excited that I have my own personal experience that we can nourish our bodies. It's thought that, you know, I know this is out there, but we don't really actually need as much food as we think. We don't need all these things that we've kind of now with modern society, we kind of rely upon. But when we're nourished by water purification and sunlight, basically all the elements of the earth, through the wind, through our breath, we really get nourished on a level that we actually don't need as much. And these are all ancient techniques that yogis still live today. And that there's many people that have known to live very long lives and we don't hear about them, but there must be doing something right. And I've always been very fascinated by that kind of, what we call it, just the miraculous, I guess, but really these yogis say it's not miraculous. It's just living a life of dedication and discipline and just tuning into basically our optimal resources that we have with inside.
Yeah, because that level of self-discipline, you know, any self-discipline is what creates freedom. And actually my husband and I were talking about this just today in that, you know, in July, he and I embarked upon a 90-day juice cleanse. So all we consumed was fresh pressed juice. And since then, we have been eating a raw vegan lifestyle. And to those who look at this, it looks like extreme, and maybe one would more gently call it discipline. But this level of discipline has generated more freedom for he and I than anything has ever happened. Now I've done juicing and raw veganism for, you know, off and on for 19 years. So I've done it before and remembered it. And the frequency, it's all about frequency. All food has frequency. Whether or not you should be a vegan or not has everything to do with frequency as well, because animal food, you know, especially things like beef, it has a much lower and slower frequency and therefore is extremely grounding. And therefore there are times in one's experience or life or even seasons through our life, seasons throughout the year, but also seasons of our life, that we may need more grounding. And therefore we might need something with blood and of the ground. And even in the vegetarian world, you know, root vegetables and things that grow underground are very grounding, very starchy things like bread, very grounding. And by grounding, one could translate that as heaviness. It can make you feel very relaxed and kind of dull, and which is a necessary feeling sometimes. Sometimes we are so high frequency, high flying and lofty. And they say that breatharianism, which you had mentioned about the sun and the breath work, there's a man from the Middle East who I don't remember where he's exactly from, but it was in a documentary that was all about his really long life. They don't know entirely how old he is. He's definitely over 90. They think he's over 100, but they don't know that for sure. And he eats very few times per year. He is a breatharian and light worker. He gets all of his energy, they say, and they studied him from the breath and from the sun. And And then you go a little bit less and you go into juicing of raw fruits and vegetables. That's the next kind of highest frequency from breatharianism. And then you go into raw veganism, and then you go into veganism and vegetarianism, and then there's meat. And these frequencies are sometimes needed. It's not like you evolve into a level of consciousness of ahimsa and you never again have anything that grounds you to the degree that meat can. Sometimes mm-hmm. that's necessary. But with regards to, like, you know, kind of bringing up the light in the first bit of the morning and the science behind it and how it starts your circadian rhythm to enable you to sleep better at night. It can restore gut health and depression, hormonal imbalances, the immune modulation. Like, there is so much to seeing the amber and the red lights at the sunrise and even the sunset, and to not bring up the blue light past a certain time of your day in order for melatonin to work on your behalf and dopamine and everything that can balance your entire health and your circadian rhythm. But it needs to be initiated. And that happens with that beginning light that says we are awake, we are beginning this day, and then to use food accordingly to the frequency that you need. I know you and I talked about that too, you know, of like, is the symptoms that we experience sometimes, you know, are they in the lower half of our body? Do they have to do with grounding? Could it benefit that person to say, I'm not so caught up in my mind that I only eat the following things, and maybe I in fact need to eat something that will ground me very, very quickly and bring me back into my body, because some of us spend a significant amount of time out of our body. And the body will start to tell you through symptoms that it needs to be brought back into its awareness of its presence. Were you also barefoot on the ground at any point?
Gosh, I'm trying to think. Because it was kind of chilly, I didn't, but I do enjoy that. Because, right, it's like mm-hmm. walking in the sand is so powerful because it has mm-hmm. the little crystals in it. But yeah, just spending time in nature, and then like basically every day, just dedication and commitment to my own inner well-being. So I had a big, you know, purpose behind what I was doing too. And I think that what came to mind too, that I really want, it was a message that came through, is like, you know, you know the way, Jenna, basically it was saying to this, just higher self saying, you know, the way to, you know, do these practices and don't wait. You now don't have to wait. And it's in such a non-judgmental way, but to have a health crisis, like, you know, the pathway. Mm-hmm. And so with that said, I think it's great we touch base on symptoms and health, and because many of us are going to come across something in life we didn't realize was accumulating. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, this has overtaken my life. And then it starts to adjust into our body, because our body is so brilliant and so smart. I mean, it's even like our whole awareness around getting a cold, right? A cold is really the body's ability. It's not sick. It's actually healing. So mm-hmm. step one, right? It's like, let's give the body back its credit. It's been what I believe underestimated for a purpose, because when we underestimate the body and all that the earth actually provides us, we don't need very much. And so with that, there's a significant amount of greed that leads the planet. And so we're taught very much to rely upon everything else. And even this winter, you know, time, I love Laura's work with the Holy Nights, 13 Holy Nights. She has a deck mm-hmm. and she has a really beautiful video out and just really calling people back to what winter is really all about. So she prepares mm-hmm. the way. And she talks about how winter, like, right, our calendars are inundated with so much. We overschedule. We a significant amount of sugar and alcohol is a part of that season. And just do, when you really see nature is starting to settle down. The leaves are falling. If you've ever been able to be in the snow, there's a stillness that it brings and such a magic. But so just to be back into the rhythms of nature and back into that, we actually truly have so much that we can access and just do for ourselves. So yeah, mm-hmm. with the meditation. I mean, that's like getting your own direct channel. That's like not waiting for someone else to tell you, like, this is what needs to be done. It's like, this is what you need, your body. And so we have what I say, these birthrights, these gifts, and we were all given them. And so we can really get quiet and understand what our gifts are, what our purpose is, and navigate our lives in a bigger and brighter way. Because many, I know for many of us during, you know, November and even October, there were some eclipses and some major, like, you know, big calls for us to shed and let go of things. And I know for me, I mean, relationship wise, you know, no longer, you know, being in a relationship in the way that I was. And so stepping out of that, and I have to say, that's a really powerful call for me, because I truly was, adore the person that I've been married to for 20 years, but it was no longer serving. And so by us, and this is huge for me, so I have to share this because I'm a very personal person. I don't share, you know, just everything, but at the same time, it's like this beautiful opportunity to, that we can love people and that we can serve ourselves and our families, and everybody actually benefits from this. And it was a huge lesson for me that as I let go, I saw that actually the beauty of even our friendship is better, that he, you know, my nervous system was more calm. There's like all these beautiful gifts out of it. And for us, we know that we have been long time, you know, in many lives together and just really have a connection. And so it was this big call that we need to do life on our own. And really, it's been that way for some time, but to actually take that step was huge. And do it for reals, and like really step into it and really own it. And so, and I know so many are going through that process, so I thought I'd share that. And then just also so much around health is going on. Like, cause we, when things are trying to shift and evolve us, what we used to be able to do no longer can serve. So there's ways in which we may are acting or responding to life that just no longer are sustainable. And so, yeah, I got a lot of that good information when I was in retreat with myself. It's like the downloads were coming, and just, you know, beautiful opportunities to call in my well-being, to call in my fire that I had lost through giving away myself. So the fire purification, just to give kind of like an example of why the yogis had it going on, is because the fire is much more than you know, just a lovely thing to look at. And it's beauty is to, of course, there's a lot of symbolism around renewal, and but it lights us up. It brightens our internal being. And when we're by it, it also has infrared. And so I would light up a fire most every day on that retreat. And then plus use sun therapy for my fire element, because I knew inside that my spark had started to dwindle, and was because of giving a life of service had finally kind of caught up with me. And so it was give the life back to yourself. And I actually have had physical symptoms, and this is very emotional for me to share, but I want to share that I was at a loss. I was losing literally my life force, we'll just put it that way, of energy and oxygenation, and had very scary symptoms that I was, you know, talking to Stephanie, she knows all about it, but I don't share the symptoms as often, because when we get in those symptoms, we start to feel this fear and the panic around them. And so whenever I would fear, have that panic or that fear, or even afraid that I might not make it through the night, and I had some major physical symptoms that showed why that I would think that, but a loss of oxygenation and things. And so it's important to acknowledge it, because obviously it's happening, but what is the symptoms trying to teach me? And I actually made a huge call out, because I knew symptoms are very important. And even I was talking to Stephanie, she reminded me the importance of symptoms. And I did a call because symptoms were starting to get a little intense. Like they were really, really present. And I said, I called out for this angelic realm to support me while I was in this higher source, and that was that I understand exactly why the symptoms are there, but could we please alleviate them and that I will dedicate my life to oxygenating and providing a service. And that's right when I went into my 5-day thing, is like, I made that commitment that I will oxygenate. So it wasn't like, oh yeah, I can you alleviate this, but I'm not going to do the work. Right.
It's like, right.
I'm going to do the work. And yeah. I knew that when I called out for that angelic support, that they also very much acknowledged that I would do the work, that I was dedicated yeah. enough for my life, that I would push into that brighter and bigger than ever before. So it was this big call in to yeah. actually reclaim my energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because if we were to have come in with, you know, 100% of our personal power, you know, and our personal power is our generator that creates and sustains life. And we come into this life, and let's say we're at 100, and then a circumstance happens at 4 years old that, you know, you have to give five away, you know, so now you're at 95% personal power. And then, you know, at 12, something happens. And then at 15, you remember what happens at 12, and now you're down 30%. And then you spend the rest of your life replaying your traumas where you gave away your personal power, and you continue to extend your personal power so far through the memories and experiences of trauma that you are actually in debt when it comes to your personal power. You are in the negative. Yeah. And we don't take the time to reclaim it. And even what you mentioned with relationship, for example, and mm-hmm. and how, you know, everybody, we kind of become complacent in relationships and or in habits and practices and jobs and everything. You know, when I've broken my back in 4 places, and I can remember feeling tremendous hope that I'll be able to walk again and feel my left leg, or to walk normally, or to do yoga. And I've had a frozen shoulder that I could only hope at the time, because when you're in it, you think you're never going to be able to use that limb again or ever be able to walk again. Your experience and your traumas feel like your reality, because you're reliving it on a daily basis. And so you think, I'm not going to be able to. Then the moment you can, the moment you realize, oh, look, I'm actually bent over backwards, my back is great. Oh, look, I'm actually running. Oh, look, my shoulder has full range of motion. There's a gratitude from the experience of not having had that recently that we should hold on to every day. But how often do you look into yourself and say, spleen, I am grateful for you and all that you do, you know, lungs, I am so grateful for your capacity to sustain my life force. You know, how often are we looking at our experience and what we in fact do have with gratitude? Most often we are like, if only I were thinner, if only I could do that yoga pose and actually be flexible, if only I could swim and have that those kind of shoulders, or if only it were something other than your experience. But gratitude is really what it is that we need in order to continue to have what we now have, such as flexibility, motility, you know, and the life force, the level of oxygen. And even with relationships, you know, we become so resistant to the changes that are necessary in order to transform. We don't want to go into the cocoon. We're like, no, caterpillar life for me. I'm just a caterpillar. That's all I'm going to be. And yet everything in you is beckoning you to enter into a cocooned, quiet winter, whatever, retreat state, because you are about to embark upon a beautiful metamorphic experience that is your higher calling. And we resist it. We resist it. We resist it. It's the same principle behind saying, I'd like to manifest making 10 grand per month, and a job was energetically at the door for you that was going to earn you 20 grand per month. And it leaves the front door because you are focused so highly on only 10 grand that is, you're resistant to the potential that is available to you, to the infinite opportunity. We cling so tightly to what is relationships and what roles they were supposed to play and how it was, my health and how it used to be, my physical capability, what I looked like back then. We cling so tightly to it that we don't allow grace to move us and transform us into that next step that is waiting for us. But the body, as you just talked about, has been and will always notify you in advance of anything uncomfortable. And sometimes, though, you only have a window of intuition before something happens. Like, for example, right before I broke my back, something very, very strongly told me not to get on the horse. And I really just felt like, I don't think so. But guess what? I felt external pressure that said, yeah, but my future in-laws, I was just engaged, and my future in-laws, they are getting the horses ready. And the guy that I'm engaged to, I want to impress him that I can, you know, ride this horse. And, you know, that's just what was planned today. I don't want to disrupt the status quo of, and there's family dynamics that are problems. Like, I just have to go with the flow. But I absolutely, and it wasn't the same thing as fear of like, this is a Mustang I'm about to ride, and I really don't know how to ride a horse. I should have a healthy level of fear. Sure. But this was an intuition that told me you should not actually ride. And then I end up breaking my back in four places. So it's a matter of the quietness and the willingness to disappoint, the willingness to not be the nice person who, like I said, niceties to a degree can kill you, or, you know, it's a simplistic way of saying something that's very backed by science and disease. There's personalities behind disease types. And yet we have to be willing to say, no, that's it. I was totally into it. I felt like this was what was going to happen, or yeah, this relationship was going to go this way. I was pretty sure, but I can tell that regardless what disassembling you're going to have to do in your life to unmeld, this is the necessary next step for this to transform into something incredibly beautiful. And that your body is absolutely and always telling you, but like you said, it got to a point where once you acknowledged it, you finally said, okay, I do hear you. I am listening. But this is too uncomfortable with me to be able to live with. Can we decrease the severity? And yes, I will make the changes. But most often the severity continues to get louder and louder and louder, like a child who keeps saying, mom, 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 mama, mom, mama, hey. And then misbehaves because that's how they finally got your attention. Well, there's the symptoms. There's the severity. There's the, are you actually going to take the time? Yeah, sure. Is work going to give you the time off? You know, I have a lot of clients who are school teachers, and that job is something else, you know, and the duration that you must just continue through the seasons, you know, you work only from here until here, and then you have the summer off. This is just what is done. Taking time off is such a burden, and it's disruptive to the kids. And then there's the obligation, whatever it is. Yes. However, if your body is speaking to you, it does not immediately go to the disease diagnosis that you think you just came by. There was years, most likely, of it whispering to you. There were signals constantly and intuitions, and you just didn't listen. And too often, we do not listen to the transformation cues that are beckoning us until they are so severe that they physically stop you. Just like what I was not paying attention to in my life that required me to physically be broken and immobile in order to see.
Yep. Kind of the human experience, huh? It's like in a nutshell, yeah. Right there. And I was thinking about when you were talking too, a couple of things, and that is calling in for 2023 is like, a lot of us are going to have to say no. No is going to be maybe the best thing that we do, and we're going to not call in any more of what we don't need. And so that came to mind. And then I love the piece about when you're talking about gratitude, because I had during retreat some very powerful experiences. So rather than thinking about lack of oxygen, every time that I breathe, I thought, God, what a beautiful gift, you know, that my oxygen supplies me with so much life. And I just felt radiant and energy, because gratitude is scientific. And they show that the act of gratitude literally blesses the body and brings up, you know, those happy molecules and hormones and everything kind of really, you know, those very much confirmation. I got chills down my spine as I, you know, was just super grateful. At that moment, it's like right now, that's what I'm focused on, because we can all focus on the story that it feels broken. This isn't working. And of course, there's that fine line of like acknowledging it, but then being like, okay, but my body's only simply telling me something rather yes. than, you know, so it's how we conversate and our conversations with our ego.
There's a tremendous
amount of work around that.
Yes.
I know, and I've been loving it because I've been more and more, I only teach two classes at the studio, and I just briefly bring up the importance of the mind because that is huge, and the importance of understanding our ego because it very much has a role. It just needs to not take front seat all the time.
Yes.
And I love that I've had students come after and say, I really want to learn more about the ego and I want to know about how to have conversations with my mind, just based on what I've told them that it's so important that we have conversations with our mind. Our yes. mind is always having a conversation. Have you noticed? It's always talking. But when we say, oh, I hear you, ego, you are scared. It's the example that I gave recently in another podcast where it's like you're crossing the street and that ego is going to be maybe like this just example, like, no, let's not cross the street. We could clearly get hurt. I mean, this is really dangerous. the ego has a point. It actually is dangerous. But at the same time, if we listened in and we like cross that street, we would not really have the human experience. And so the ego's purpose is keep us safe. But what I like my work around is, and it's a cute expression, the ego is not my amigo, but really and truly we need to make it our amigo, our friend, because it is there and it dwells within us. It's a reptilian brain though too. So we don't want to be like over letting it be in charge. And so it has a place and it has a purpose, but I would think of it as like a child that is scared. Right. And so we take that child and we say, you know what, we're going to cross the street, but you know what, ego, you can also say it to your ego. We're going to cross the street, but we're going to look both ways and we're going to be safe. We're going to get across and we're going to believe that when we get across, we're going to go have some fun. And you like that. And so then you're treating the ego almost like that scared child. And I like to think of my ego and I kind of have one finger that I put up and then I have my higher self talking and I kind of put them like they're talking at each other. Like often, you know, see that expression of the devil and the angel kind of on the shoulder, right?
Yeah.
Rather than the, you know, making something annihilated and create an ally. And so I kind of just take the ego, scoop it underneath the other and let's walk side by side. But you're going to be more in the fetal position and tucked in, not the first and forefront. So,
Yeah, I love that. I love too that even one step beyond the matter, the physical matter versus the energy or even the spiritual is we can do everything we can, you know, cross the street, you know, walk on the correct side, you know, use a crosswalk, you know, there's all those steps that we can take with the physical matter of our body. And then there is even one further step beyond that, beyond the ego. And that is in fact, the surrender of the control, because there's even the idea that, you know, and this is maybe too much for a podcast that's been going on for, you know, almost an hour, is the idea that there is a time for you and there are plenty of times that are not for you to leave this world. And so there's also the idea of, I don't have any physical need for injury. I have no lessons that I need to learn through injury of being, you know, hit by a car on my walk across this street. I've got all my ducks in a row. It's not my time. And so that comes down to another thing of surrender, which for some is also called faith. And so there's also even like, I feel your fear. Let's go, ego, like you said, scoop it aside. Me and you, we're going across, because there's also a level of surrender to that. We can't always control every single experience and cling so tightly. There was a podcast I was listening to recently. They talked about yoga being the ability to handle change and death. And death doesn't necessarily mean literally somebody dying as much as the ending of something. You know, the ending of a job is the death of that job, really, or the ending of a relationship is the death and transmutation into its next phase. And what about the surrender into, you know, as a pilot, for example? I can remember kind of doing that on my first soloing flight, is like, well, I have technically been trained on how to handle this aircraft, and it's a very windy day. Haven't encountered that before, but I have to trust and surrender and know that I will be able to land. Ego, who's telling me you should just circle above the airport until it stops being windy, you know, not going to get you down. And so there's a level of surrender to that as well. You know, I'm really stuck on what you said, and that is that 2023 is going to be the year of no, because I'm going to just, what, I mean, you and I both have said no to one of our biggest and most fun things we do with our year. And well, you've said no to a lot of things. In fact, you don't teach as many classes because you're saying no, but we're not going to be doing any retreats next year. Like, yeah. We're saying no to retreats for the year that is meant to be about you, about me, about self. And so I love it. I wasn't even thinking of it in that phrase, but I mean, I realized we said it that way, but it wasn't, it's going to be a mantra, I'm pretty sure. Uh-huh. Yes, because I, you know, if it's all about the self and the evolution of self and the growth and the healing and the transformation that the self has a bigger opportunity. And this is everyone. This is, doesn't matter if you're a Sagittarius or a Gemini, or if you're a, you know, born on the 12th or the 27th, this is a year based thing. So everyone who will be around for 2023 will be entering and moving through a 7 year of a 9 year cycle. And so it is a tremendous opportunity for everyone to really ask yourself, do I really want to, need to, or do I want to, need to do something else? And you'll have a cue. Now, I'm not saying, oh, I don't want to go to my job, therefore I won't. I'm not telling you that everybody can just say no responsibilities for me because I don't feel like it. However, if for years you have felt like I don't want to go to this job, maybe next year is an opportunity for you to find out why not. Maybe because it has been a dissatisfaction in your life because it is not the job for you anymore. Maybe it was the job for you when you went to college for it and through the years that it provided for your family. And now it's kind of like, but that's not who I'm supposed to be anymore. And your dissatisfaction, your discomfort is your guru. Your resistance is your ally. But can we actually take next year and start now? And there's no point on waiting until January 1st to retreat, either with the morning hour that you have before everyone wakes up, or can you take a weekend, or can you go attend a retreat, or, you know, can you take 30 minutes before bed, whatever time you can to be about you and say no to everyone else, even your own habits. Like, you normally are watching TV at this time. Well, maybe you say no and you just go within yourself. And, you know, you also did some sauna work, right?
Yeah. Actually during that time, I didn't use the infrared sauna
during the 5 days,
but I do that regularly. I love that. Mm-hmm. The dry brushing, water purification. So bathing is much more, you know, a bath. I know you're like such a fan of baths, right? They're mm-hmm. incredible, but yeah. There's such a purification in them. And then I added ozone, so it oxygenated the water. Mm-hmm. And then drank ozonated water for oxygen purposes. But mm-hmm. So during that purification, a lot of breath work, chanting was huge. So there's actual chants and even the eye exercises that are so amazing for the vagus nerve, and amongst other things too. It brightens our connection. It just helps to like get that one pointedness of before going into meditation. I think that most people would really benefit from actually doing a little bit of chant. I tapped into doing a sound that I don't know where it came from, but I don't know that everyone would enjoy it, but it's like probably the sound of like someone when they shatter glass, you know.
Oh, wow.
It was really, because what I started to feel is to connect with the pineal gland. Like, there's so much around breath work, and some people do, you know, obviously plant medicine to access that, but for me, I really like doing what I have inside. So when I have done some of these amazing breath work classes, I have tapped into the pineal gland and then had all these kind of cool experiences that someone might have if they're on plant medicine as well. But I just know that pineal gland is just so, such a valuable resource. And so, yeah. Right, it's our eye of wisdom. But this high kind of sound kind of accesses it. And it really, it's interesting because I start to vibrate at my, like right at the root chakra. And yeah. it almost, to get up the spine, it's basically kind of lifting that kundalini and lifting it right to that third eye. It's this very yeah. high tone, which would be similar to like a crystal bowl. You know, mm-hmm. when you start to be in a sound bath, you're like, those are accessing all these different frequencies in our body. And so, yeah, we just have these amazing, you know, ability to access sound frequency is huge. And then I yes. had my daughter do one sound bath for me and then just mm-hmm. spent time on, you know, a lot of the things that we did like at our retreat. We brought the wellness lounge, and that was mm-hmm. things that are at the wellness lounge in Paso below the yoga studio. And that's its infrared kind of jade mat and red light mm-hmm. therapy. I mean, some of these kind of modalities too blended in with the ancient is just so yes. cool. Yeah.
And like you said too about light therapy, you know, sound bowls emit light as well. And some people who can see that, they describe it as like a strand, almost like a spider that jumps off and casts one web to catch another thing over there. And that it shows up and it kind of glistens almost the way that a rainbow refracts, you know, against water. It kind of looks like that, and they can shoot off different colors. And so not everyone can see that, but even crystals and having crystals with moonlight, there's light and color, and light and color and sound are all forms of light and of frequency and of the same healing essence that we're only starting to discover, you know, is everywhere. Even the way that trees communicate to one another through the ground and the way that they're finding that plants actually can learn. And yet that wasn't even thought to be possible, but they're doing experiments that suggest that all of this living energy, you know, like neuroplasticity and your brain's ability to change, it's all of these varying forms of frequency that we have within our innate knowing. We don't actually have to have anything outside of ourselves. Like you said, your body made that sound. Now let's say that, you know, you haven't found your sound yet. So you have a singing bowl. So you do it with singing bowls or tuning forks or those chimes that you have that I love so much. The ones with the K, what are they?
Oh yeah. Koshi.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I love those. That sound yeah. just really gets to me. And then chimes and the way we're called most people, I'm not sure that's accurate. Lots and lots of people are very moved by like Benedictine monk chanting and the chants that are had through church facilities because of the frequency of that healing. Yeah, we have it. We have it within us. We just don't take the time to give that to us. And hopefully this podcast for everyone has been all about reminding you that rather than be fear generated, which a lot of us wait for change until fear has become so loud that we then want to make changes, even if it's as basic as having a cold and all of a sudden you can no longer smell and your sinuses are clogged. And so what is it that you do? But finally notice your nose, the very thing on your face that's right there and you hardly ever pay attention to when it's working. But when it stops working, it is now the object of your every single thought and you're suffering, and you then stew and perpetuate your dissatisfaction in your nose and its inability to breathe. What if in order to heal it, because you're not, like you said, sick, your nose is taking care of something and its wisdom and the mucus in your body and its beautiful healing. What if every moment you would have said, oh, my nose, oh, I can't breathe, oh, the snot, oh, I got to blow my nose is raw. All of the complaints that you could continue to repeat again and again, what if all you did was, oh, gratitude for my ability to smell. Oh, things are, when you can smell things, it's so great. Oh, the smell of the forest, oh, the ability to breathe through my nose. You know, all of the beautiful things that your nose gives you, that is the healing frequency that will transmute your suffering. And just like what Jenna was saying, you know, rather than replay and divulge all of the physical symptoms and diagnoses or anything that you may have been going through, the work begins the moment that stops being your focus and the healing becomes your focus. But how often what do they say? Suffering loves company. People get together and commiserate on all of their sufferings, and then somehow they bond to one another in their comfort of discomfort, and then they continue to have those experiences, which now made them best friends. But they're not going to heal in that way. They're not going to heal if they don't continue to say, "But let's do the work now."
Right. So it's about switching the script in our minds, right? And mm-hmm. sometimes we have to really recreate and rewrite our stories. And that's such an invitation for 2023 is be with us mm-hmm. and really enjoying being with ourselves and learning mm-hmm. about ourselves. And hey, hence the reason why we have self-study podcasts. So, right?
Yep.
Is that
right.
self-study is just like, gosh, there's a whole you know, they say, right, a universe with inside, but the university of knowledge that we possess and carry and mm-hmm. is pretty magnificent within.
Yeah. And hopefully we will do more of these podcasts throughout all our journey of the inward journey of 2023. Yeah. Unless, of course, one of us says no, then we will allow that.
Yeah.
We'll allow for nope. That. Yep. Nope. Not today. Okay. Next time. But yeah, we'll put more out there and maybe even do some actual practices of like, you know, advise you in advance. No driving for this, please, but we're going to guide you on some breath work.
Yeah.
We're going to. Yes.
Yeah. No, please. Talk about kind of doing the, like the YouTube even. I think that would be
right.
Really cool. So that having these practices that we're going to be really taking on ourselves. So that mm-hmm. I really just can't wait for this 2023 because it's just a continuation of doing our own in work. And I'm really excited to see how we come out of that and what transformation. And so along the way, we can definitely share some techniques and for sure.
Yep. And we'll get to recording it either on YouTube or on IGTV, and we'll be back for retreats, you know, our women's retreat we're going to do again in the spring of 2024. At least that's the current plan. But in the meantime, be prepared, everyone, for us to say no and find your personal power and ability to say no too with grace. It's all about grace, because when you say no because of self-love, you will likely not receive argument. You will really not likely receive the resistance from your loved ones when you express that in order for me to love you more, I need to love me more right now. Yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure. I noticed that in so far that's been the case, mm-hmm. right? Everybody wants to back you up and they want to help you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give permission to ourselves and it gives permission to others to do the same.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been wonderful. Retreat, transformation, and seven energy, and moving into the year of no, which in fact will give you a significant amount of freedom and possibilities. We will see you next time, and we'll be on YouTube so that we can guide you through this journey. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Self-Study Project, a podcast to deepen your practice through reflection, with co-hosts Jenna Baird and Stephanie Gibson. Subjects cover holistic health, nutrition, yoga, philosophy, spirituality, astrology, parenting, relationships, conscious living, sustainable practices, and so much more. At no time does this podcast offer medical advice and is for educational purposes only. It remains your decision to pursue any information, and do not hold your hosts or their guests liable. More information available at theselfstudyproject.com.